Hey guys, before we get into today's episode, we wanted to tell you about a really cool project we had the opportunity to work on in collaboration with the Gabby Petito Foundation. Recently, we had the opportunity to go up to Laramie, Wyoming, where the Gabby Petito Foundation connected us with another nonprofit out there who's doing excellent work called the SAFE Project. The SAFE Project is a domestic violence shelter in Laramie, Wyoming, and the Gabby Petito Foundation, they had actually gone out there prior and realized that they did not have a security gate out there, which is a huge issue, as you can imagine, for a domestic violence shelter. Obviously, it creates safety concerns for the clients as well as the staff there. And so when we were at CrimeCon, Joe Petito actually connected with us and let us know that they were putting up some funding for that security gate, but they only had half of it. And so they asked us if we wanted to collaborate with them on providing a safety gate for the SAFE Project. And of course, we said, absolutely, if we can make it happen, we're going to. And that's exactly what we did. So we actually took a little trip up to Laramie, Wyoming. We got to meet all of the wonderful staff at SAFE Project and see all the wonderful work that they're doing every single day. And we're super excited to announce that the Higher Hope Foundation, alongside the Gabby Petito Foundation, will be providing the funding to get that security gate put in for the SAFE Project. While we were up there, we recorded some interviews with the SAFE Project staff, as well as Joe Petito, and we want to share that with you now.
And before we play that, I just wanted to say thank you to all of you who support our foundation and support really all of our shows, because that allows us to fund our foundation and to fund grants for projects like this. So it's all thanks to you guys.
If you actually stick around to the end of this episode, we're going to play some of the extended interview clips from that interview with Joe Petito at SAFE Project that I think is well worth your time. So check it out.
So what is the mission of SAFE Project?
Yeah, here at SAFE Project, our mission is to empower and advocate for survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking while promoting sustainable practices that support long-term healing. Along with that, we focus on education and awareness efforts to focus on prevention and improve community response and outcomes.
Can you tell us more about the services that SAFE Project offers?
Yeah, so all the services SAFE Project offers are free and confidential. We have a 24-hour hotline, an emergency shelter. We do court accompaniment, hospital accompaniment, as well as like police reporting accompaniment. We have financial aid for survivors, and we can help fill out protection orders as well.
Here at SAFE Project, we believe a lot in bringing awareness to our community. Mm-hmm. So we partner with our community and we go into schools and teach about healthy relationships and healthy boundaries and consent. And we also have a program called SAFE Men, where we partner with our university and their violence prevention program. And we teach about healthy boundaries there, but also how to be a good bystander and just spread awareness whenever we can.
And how did you get in contact with SAFE Project?
SAFE Project reached out to Nikki and Tara about doing an event that they had here. And then Tara and Nikki came. They absolutely fell in love with the people that worked here, because, I mean, you met them. They're really amazing.
Yeah.
And Nikki and Tara noticed that they didn't have a security fence around their property. We just decided that we're going to put up half and try and raise the other half. And whether that be matching donations or whatever it was, that's when we heard from you. You guys are gonna put up the other half. Like, that's fantastic. It's because of that enables us to do what we're doing here today, and getting them that security fence to make sure that people that come here are safe.
Yeah.
That's step one, which is kind of why we're here today. And I'll tell you, I'm in awe of the Higher Hope Foundation. Just amazing what you guys do. And
it was such a big deal for us to come up here to Laramie to see it firsthand, and you know, you can and just really the lay of the land, and you realize like the fence is critical, has a long lasting impact, right? Like, this is not just a one and done type thing, where this will just provide that safety and security for years to come.
Yeah, and you know, it's so great for our audience to be able to actually see the impact directly, because all of this is thanks to them. Can you tell me more about why this project and why a security fence is so needed here at Safe Project?
Yeah, so here at Safe Project, one of our biggest things is providing all of our clients with safety. And we have taken a lot of safety measures, but unfortunately, without a security gate, we have people who can come onto the property who maybe shouldn't be on the property. We've had abusers who have showed up. And I think it's really important for the healing journey of survivors that they feel 100% safe when they're here to see us confidentially. But it's also really important to keep all of the staff here safe. This job is already intense, yeah. And just having that little bit of extra security, I think, will help us, our clients, and the community feel safer.
Yeah. I'm just so glad to hear that, and thank you so much for everything you do. You guys are amazing.
Thank you guys for all of the support to get this gate, because it's not something we could have done without the support of the Higher Hope Foundation and without the Gabby Petito Foundation.
Of course, we feel privileged to be able to help.
What's up, everybody?
And welcome back to Mile High Podcast, episode 370. And today we're looking at a very strange disappearance, one that certainly needs more coverage. We're going to be talking about the disappearance of Tiffany Witten.
Yeah, she disappeared after running out of a Walmart in Marietta, Georgia. She had gotten caught shoplifting. And when she was confronted by loss prevention, she basically dropped everything, just ran straight out of the building, and then just completely vanished and has not been seen since that day. Pretty strange. There's a lot more, obviously, to the story than that, but one that is actually very surprising to me that it has not been solved or that she hasn't been found. It's just very, very bizarre. A lot of other context to go over. The man that she was dating at the time sort of was there as well. And potentially he may play a role in her disappearance.
Certainly a possibility of foul play.
There's some other possible scenarios here. Just a really bizarre one, though. But I'm your host, Josh.
I'm your host, Kendall. We are joined by our production duo, Ian and Janelle.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
How's it going?
So yeah, let's just go ahead and get right into things then. How about that?
Sounds good to me. Tiffany Witten was born to Lisa Daniels on January 30th, 1987. And we don't know much about Tiffany's early life in Georgia. We do know that she was primarily raised in Kennesaw, which is a western suburb of Atlanta. Tiffany's father, whose name is not known, and Lisa got divorced shortly after Tiffany was born. And she was soon raising Tiffany by herself, but with the help of her mother, Anita Boyette. And while details are sparse on this portion of Tiffany's life, we can imagine that Lisa, you know, as a single mother, was working extremely hard to support Tiffany. She had been working as a financial controller and showed up tirelessly every day to support her family. Still, Lisa said that she knew that she had made mistakes with Tiffany, though we're not exactly sure what she means by that and what those mistakes could have been. But for Tiffany's early childhood, she was described as happy-go-lucky and also rambunctious. She was attached to her mother's hip, she went everywhere with her, and she really treated Lisa as her best friend. However, from early on, there were signs of Tiffany's impulse and behavior problems. Lisa explained that even when her daughter was only 2 years old, she would find stolen toys from her daycare in her toy box, which is, you know, somewhat common. But Lisa said she began stealing quite a bit when she was two, And she would ask about it, and she'd just say, someone gave it to me. And she was also a pathological liar. She just got better over the years. And that's a quote from her mother. So as the years went on, Tiffany continued to steal small items, even if she had cash on her. And then when she reached high school, Tiffany rebelled even more. While she had dreamed of becoming a veterinarian, Tiffany's ambitions ended when she dropped out of school as a sophomore. She had gotten pregnant for the first time and was convinced to give the child up for adoption. According to the people around her, Tiffany had, quote, never been the same after her first pregnancy, which I can imagine that young, it would take a serious toll on you. And shortly after this, things would take a turn, unfortunately, for the worse, and lead her to make some very poor decisions. In 2008, she had another child, her daughter Addison, who looked so much like her. A family friend said, if you want to know Tiffany, just meet Addison. In addition, Tiffany received a lot of male attention. She was a, quote, cheerleader blonde and tanning booth gold, and worked intermittently as a waitress at Hooters while living in Kennesaw. Most tragically, this is when Tiffany began to use drugs. And like many people, it started with an OxyContin prescription, and then eventually she moved on to heroin and eventually methamphetamines. And during this time, her petty shoplifting also really ramped up, and she was caught stealing a pair of flip-flops from a local Walmart. Now, at this point in Tiffany's life, it's safe to say that she likely was exhibiting some form of kleptomania, and her urge to steal wasn't out of necessity, but instead this was a behavioral issue. And I'm sure a lot of you have heard the term kleptomania or kleptomaniac. If you didn't know, according to the Cleveland Clinic, it is a mental health condition where a person feels an overpowering, irresistible urge to steal things. And oftentimes those who suffer from this disorder know that stealing is wrong, and they understand that the items that they're stealing are most of the time worthless, but they cannot stop themselves. And what people really need to understand is this impulse isn't caused by a lack of willpower or self-control or even a character flaw. Instead, it's a medical condition where the person doesn't have the ability to resist the urge, and they often still feel, you know, shameful and guilty, and they feel stressed out about their stealing. And while for many, we have an inhibition around stealing, those with kleptomania simply cannot help themselves. And in Tiffany's case, this lack of impulse control could also have affected her drug use, addictions, and romantic relationships as well, as she would struggle with all three of these throughout her life. In March of 2011, Tiffany was living with several others in Dalton, located in northern Georgia. She and other members of the house were arrested following a violent home invasion, and Tiffany claimed that the woman who was the target of the robbery had ripped her off for $60 earlier in the day, and she was just coming to collect the cash that she felt like she was owed. However, investigators learned that it likely stemmed from a payment for a drug deal that the victim failed to deliver. Tiffany was sentenced to a short prison term in 2012. Her mother, Lisa, practiced tough love and took care of Addison, telling Tiffany that she wasn't allowed to see her daughter until she had gotten completely clean and sober. Meanwhile, Tiffany's grandma, Anita, wrote to her in prison, quoting scripture and ways that she could change her life, and Tiffany responded with long letters of her own, greeting Anita as Mima in every one. When Tiffany was released in December of 2012, Anita was the one who drove to South Georgia to pick her up. She even dropped her off at a rehab center where she stayed clean for 1 month. And according to those who knew her, this was a familiar pattern. It was always a month with Tiffany, and that is a direct quote. But that did not deter Anita. She said, I am always going to keep the lines of communication open. I have to. It doesn't matter whether she's using drugs or not. I'm her grandmother.
But it seemed like things were finally improving for Tiffany. She had gotten clean again in the spring of 2013 and was living with a landscaper whom she'd been seeing romantically. And he seemed to take the relationship and Tiffany's recovery very seriously as well. He introduced her to his parents and even bought a car for her, as well as a cell phone. And then Tiffany got a part-time job at an IHOP in Marietta, and it seemed like she could stay clean for a while. But unfortunately, those old habits and impulses came back, and the relationship ended after she cheated on him and began using heroin and meth again at the same time. She then fell back into her old ways. She started drifting and dating others involved in heavy drug use, including a man named Jason Zuccherini, who will come up again later. But while she could get stable housing after moving with her coworker, Sheila Fuller, she was often sent home early from work because she had track marks on her arms or was high on the clock. Growing further apart from her own family, Tiffany needed something or someone really to rely on. And that is when she met Ashley Cottle in the summer of 2013. In Ashley, Tiffany said she saw in him another and perhaps last chance for fulfilling both parts of her irreconcilable dream, hard drugs, and enduring domestic bliss. He had a young daughter named Charlie who loved Tiffany from very early on. And Ashley said, "The first day we met, she took my daughter swimming. I've never been accepted by a female with my daughter that way. She was the first woman that was like, oh, your daughter's so beautiful, let's go swimming. Her and my daughter playing in the pool, it really tickled me pink, and it made my day to see them that way." Ashley knew that Tiffany had a daughter of her own and knew that she hadn't seen her since Christmas. Tiffany would always reunite with her family, especially around the holidays. And no matter what, Tiffany would always reunite with her family around the holidays, regardless of her drug use at the time. But he never knew about her first daughter, whom Tiffany had to give up for adoption. And he also wasn't familiar with her shoplifting. Ashley said, "Charlie called her mom because Tiffany taught Charlie a lot of key things that a little girl is going to need in her life. Yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, you know, just basic things." And compared to Ashley, who was hopping from place to place, dealing a small amount of meth to make money, Tiffany, according to him, had her shit together. She was employed, had a place she shared with a coworker, and aside from the heavy drug use, things seemed to be going well for both her and Ashley. However, that all changed when the manager at IHOP caught Tiffany on their surveillance footage stealing money from another waitress. Now, it's unclear if this waitress was Sheila or if there was an additional incident that happened, but still, Sheila also evicted Tiffany from their living situation because Tiffany was stealing from her. And now, Tiffany was not only living with Ashley, but he needed to make enough money to now support his daughter, Tiffany, as well as their growing drug use. He said, "I went from petty drug dealing to really trying to move drugs to support me and her. You know, food, clothes, diapers. I didn't know she had a real hard addiction until she came to me one day and said, 'Look, I'm sick.' That's when she told me she was doing heroin. I didn't know that she was using heroin like that until she actually asked me for money." And what followed was an argument about money and drugs. Ashley said, "I've always been addicted to methamphetamine, but I'm totally anti-heroin. We had maybe two fights, but they were always verbal arguments. I mean, I'm about the least kind of violent person ever in this world." It's important to keep in mind that Ashley is also a pathological liar, and the couple fought constantly, especially once Tiffany was evicted from her place with Sheila.
You guys, I can't believe it. Not too long from now, I'm going to be back in the baby food days. I have another little one coming in March, and it'll be some time until they start eating food. But when that time comes, I plan on returning to Little Spoon because we loved Little Spoon so much for my daughter, and my daughter loved it too. It made our lives easier, and she was enjoying herself, baby. Their recipes are made with pediatricians, and they're packed with hidden vegetables. And it's not just baby food. They also offer toddler food, so everyone can be involved. And Little Spoon is actually the first baby food and toddler food company to set strict publicly available standards for heavy metals, pesticides, and more in their food for peace of mind. Their recipes are made with pediatricians, packed hidden veggies, which is huge in our house because my daughter is so picky. We've got to hide whatever we can in there. And even though there's hidden veggies in there, she's still asking for seconds. Everything is made with real ingredients. No artificial flavors, sweeteners, or dyes. It's the rare combo of convenient and healthy. And it's so nice for us, especially on those nights where we want to have something that's like out of her realm of what she will consider eating. And we don't have to limit what we're going to eat just because she's picky. We can give her something else and we don't feel bad about it because it's healthy. She's still getting her veggies and we can have what we want. Plus, it's easy for us. It's convenient. We don't even have to think about it because their meals and snacks can just show up on your doorstep every 2 weeks. Whether it's breakfast on the floor or dinner in the backseat, Little Spoon frees up time for the things that really matter without compromising on ingredients. Mealtimes are one less thing to think about. And as a parent, that's gold. Little Spoon is the mealtime hack that parents can't stop talking about. Try their no-prep, nutrient-packed meals and snacks for babies, toddlers, and big kids. Get 50% off your first online order at littlespoon.com/milehigher with code milehigher at checkout. That's littlespoon.com/milehigher. And don't forget to use our show's code for 50% off your first order.
And from there, the couple bounced from motel to motel to trailer parks and friends' drug dens. At one motel, the couple fought so intensely that the police were called. Ashley said they came in, looked at the room, checked their arms, and we were all fine. Then at a trailer park, they fought so often and loudly that they were evicted from the entire place. Rachel Greiner, who lived with them during this time, said this: "Some nights after they fought, she'd come into my bed and sleep like a little sister." But to the outside world, Tiffany was in love. She posted this photo of Ashley and captioned it, "Kissy face, love you, baby." Around this time, Anita went to pick up Tiffany for lunch and saw Ashley for the first time. And she said, "When I looked at him, I thought, my granddaughter is mixed up with this." And of course, there's the photo of that was captioned "kissy face." And I see where Anita is coming from here.
Such a loser. Oh, you're right, Ian. He does have just Irish tattooed on him.
Just Irish.
Yeah.
With the two clovers.
And then following her firing from IHOP in August, her mother cut off all communication with Tiffany. Lisa said, "Tiffany, I will always love you, but you're killing me." On September 8th, 2013, after church, Anita received a text from Tiffany that said, "Mima, where are you?" Anita immediately called Tiffany and said she wanted to know if I could get them something to eat. They'd had nothing. I went and got her and took her to McDonald's. I then dropped her off. And later that evening, she called and asked if I could wash her clothes. I met her and the little girl at the laundromat, and then I took her home and hugged her tight. I said, "Honey, why don't you come home?" She said, "I wouldn't go without Ashley." I said, "Doesn't he have a home?" And she said, "He wouldn't go without me." Anita would be the only one from Tiffany's family to meet Ashley, and this would also be the last time that Anita ever saw Tiffany again.
So that brings us to the evening that Tiffany disappeared. It was September 12th, 2013. Tiffany and Ashley went to the house of Stephen Weinstein, who was a friend of theirs, an older friend of theirs, and also a fellow meth addict. The group got high before Tiffany and Ashley borrowed a red truck to drive over to the Walmart Supercenter, close to Tiffany's old job at IHOP. Now, Stephen stayed behind with Jason Zuccherini, who is the man that Tiffany had briefly dated before she got with Ashley. It was already past midnight by the time that Tiffany and Ashley left, but they were very familiar with this Walmart because not only was it open 24 hours, but both Tiffany and Ashley had used its large parking lot to buy and sell drugs. Plus, Ashley had between $400 and $500 on him, and they wanted to buy a new speaker and also baby clothes for his daughter. So the two of them arrived just after 1 a.m. on September 13th, and their movements are captured on surveillance footage. Ashley is seen on the phone with an unknown person and casually flashed his wad of cash multiple times, actually. Now, Tiffany is clearly high in the surveillance footage. According to those who have seen the tape, she never stopped moving the entire hour that she was in the store. She pushed and pulled the shopping cart and would routinely fill it with a bunch of different items before then returning them in a giant heap onto one of the shelves. And even though Ashley had cash on him, clearly, Tiffany is seen attempting to shoplift a t-shirt. She is seen stuffing it into her handbag. When Ashley saw how much Tiffany was trying to buy and the two of them got into an argument, he starts yelling at her and telling her that they can't spend that much money. Tiffany told him, "I'm shopping," and Ashley shot back, "Look, let's go. I've got somewhere to be." Ashley claimed that he did not know what Tiffany was shoplifting. They walked up to the self-checkout counter. Ashley paid for a portable loudspeaker and baby clothes before the two of them made their way to the exit. Then, just around 2:07 a.m., two men approached Tiffany, who was walking just a few feet behind Ashley. And one of them grabbed her handbag and identified himself as a loss prevention associate. He told her that they had been monitoring her movements in the store and knew that she had been shoplifting. Tiffany called out to Ashley, who was standing in the entryway by this point, and he turned around to face her, but did not react at all. You would have guessed that he was a complete stranger if you didn't know that they were a couple. And then in an instant, Tiffany just books it. She leaves her handbag with the loss prevention associate. She kicks off her flip-flops at the door before she ran off into the parking lot. And this would be the last time that anyone saw Tiffany Wynn ever again. Now, the rest of the night is a bit hazy, especially considering that the information mainly comes from Ashley, who is a known liar. And according to Ashley, he stood in the entryway for a few moments before returning to the red truck.
He was worried that the loss prevention associate would alert the police and find drugs that he had stashed in the car, so instead, he just left it in the Walmart parking lot. Meanwhile, Tiffany's ex-roommate Sheila Fuller was on shift at the IHOP and decided to run over to Walmart to buy some cigarettes quickly. She confirmed that she saw the red truck in the parking lot. Ashley claimed that he had just been walking around the nearby shopping area, calling friends to see if they had spoken to Tiffany or just asking anyone he had seen out there if they had seen her. But what's strange is that Ashley had Tiffany's phone, and surveillance cameras throughout the area did not capture him speaking to anyone. Instead, he just went straight for the IHOP. And while Tiffany was known to show up at the restaurant after her firing, she would never go in while Sheila was working. When Sheila returned to IHOP, she saw Ashley sitting on the bench outside. He asked, "Have you seen Tiffany?" Sheila responded, "Why would I have seen Tiffany? I'm the last person Tiffany would want to see." He told her she got caught shoplifting in the Walmart and ran away. "I don't know where she is." Sheila told him to call her, but Ashley then pulls out Tiffany's phone out of his pocket and says, "I'm charging it," which, again, is a really odd thing to say when the phone is clearly not being charged. It was in his fucking pocket. Sheila then asked what he was doing at IHOP, and Ashley said that he was getting picked up by a few friends before they were going to go search for Tiffany.
You might be able to tell by looking at me that I eat, and I eat a lot. And the last thing I want to have happen is have a meal without meat present at the table. I love meat, but I love good quality, sustainable, healthy meat. And I was super excited when ButcherBox came through and sponsored the podcast, because ButcherBox delivers over 100 premium protein choices straight to your door, including 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, I almost said orange chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. For nearly a decade, ButcherBox has led the industry with meat and seafood that's antibiotic-free, hormone-free, and independently verified. It's a cleaner, more trustworthy version of what you find at the grocery store delivered straight to your door. Every product meets the same rigorous standards, whether it's filet mignon or chicken nuggets, baby. And when you're hosting for the holidays this season, you know, take the shopping out of your schedule, because you can just go on ButcherBox and order all of the proteins that you need for every meal this holiday season. I was ecstatic when ButcherBox sent me a big box of all these delicious steaks. There's ribs. Oh my God, it just gets me giddy to think about firing up the smoker on a Saturday or Sunday, you know, turn on some football and eat some smoked meats, baby. ButcherBox, thank you. You made my year. And it is the most succulent steak I've had in a long, long time. I'm very impressed by the quality of proteins that they provide. I love the customization you can do with every box. You can mix in the seafoods. The salmon is delicious. It's wild caught, which is the only kind of salmon I prefer to eat. And overall, super impressed with it. It's probably a service I'll end up just paying for myself because I love it that much. It's amazing. And as an exclusive offer, our listeners can get free turkey or ham in their first box, or choose ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first order. Go to butcherbox.com/mileheart to choose your offer and get this limited time deal with free shipping always. That's butcherbox.com/mileheart, and don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Then, an hour and a half later, an SUV pulled up with Steven Weinstein, Jason Zuccherini, and two unknown women. Steven said when we got to the IHOP, Ashley was sitting out front. And he told the story of Tiffany getting caught stealing and then running out of the Walmart. He said he didn't know where she was and was afraid to go back to the truck. And I believe that part. Then he told a bullshit story about how the guards wouldn't let Tiffany go until he pulled a gun on them. Ashley's a charismatic guy. He's full of shit and a piece of shit. But people enjoy his company because for a lying piece of shit, he makes them laugh. They then went back to Steven's house, and then Steven and Jason went out to see if they could find Tiffany anywhere. Ashley kept saying, "She's going to show up. She's going to show up at the house." But again, you all have to remember, Ashley is a liar. And while he claimed to have called jails, hospitals, and old boyfriends to ask if they had seen Tiffany, no record of these calls exists. He still maintained that he had called Tiffany after she ran out of the Walmart, but not only does that call not exist, but He had her phone the whole time, or at that particular time, so that doesn't make a whole lot of sense either. And you'd think with all these calls and everyone trying to find Tiffany, that Ashley would at some point reach out to her family. And well, he never did. In November, Anita received a letter in the mail from a lawyer in Florida who represented Walmart. The letter told Anita that Tiffany Whitten had been caught shoplifting from the Walmart in Marietta, and that they could settle the matter legally with a $150 check. And if we remember back to what she had got caught stealing, it was a $15 shirt. But while they had received these letters in the past for Tiffany's petty theft, this one proved to be different. For one, Tiffany hadn't posted on Facebook since September 1st, even though she regularly updated her status with photos of herself or Ashley, and she hadn't been in touch with Anita, her younger sister, her daughter, or her mother. But Tiffany was an addict, and frankly, the family was used to these kinds of long periods of silence. However, this letter confirmed to Anita that something had happened during this period of silence, and she became worried. The first person she called was Ashley, and she immediately asked, "What is going on?" And he told her that Tiffany had disappeared. Anita said, "You didn't call us and let us know that she was gone?" Apparently, one of Ashley's comments was, "I wish I had that purse I bought her. It was a Coach purse and it was really expensive." To which Anita responded, "You can't afford transportation, but you're buying Coach purses?" But still, the family didn't know what to do. They knew Tiffany had been involved in illegal activity and didn't want to potentially endanger her if they went through law enforcement. Plus, this really could have just been another extended period of silence that they had experienced before. Tiffany's mother called Ashley just before Thanksgiving, and he told her that he had been tirelessly searching for her daughter, even though there's literally no proof he contacted even one person after Tiffany first disappeared. But Lisa held out hope that Tiffany would emerge for Christmas and the holidays like she had before during past absences. But days passed until New Year came with no signs of Tiffany. And then on January 10th, 2014, Lisa and Anita went to the Marietta Police Department and filed a missing persons report.
Now, the first detective that was assigned to their case was precisely the type of cop that Lisa feared would be looking for her daughter. He said that Tiffany was not worthy of, quote, love or care. He really said that. Weeks passed, and the detective only told Lisa that Tiffany was a junkie on a binge or a parole violator on the run. He said that she would either return home or get arrested, so there wasn't much he had to do. Just unbelievably offensive. Lisa eventually said to him, "My daughter might be a drug addict, but she wasn't born a drug addict. You have two daughters, and she is worth as much to me as they are to you." Thankfully, though, at the end of January, the case was reassigned to Detective Moeller, who was soft-spoken and just far more empathetic to Tiffany than the other investigator had been. Detective Moeller said, "Time is not to our benefit. You've heard the first 48 hours are critical to solving any crime, right? Well, this case was 4 months old. It was already a cold case when it came to us. So they were dealing with a really tough situation." And in the beginning, the only piece of evidence that she had was the letter that Anita received from the lawyer in Florida. Detective Moeller contacted Walmart, which had saved the surveillance footage in case Tiffany had tried to dispute the fine in court. Not long after that, Detective Moeller called Ashley. She said, "Once I talked to him, I knew." Aside from Ashley's lies, especially regarding his actions during the situation with the loss prevention employees, he also said numerous times that he would be willing to take a polygraph. However, he never actually showed up for the tests themselves. While Detective Moeller certainly suspected that Ashley was somehow involved in Tiffany's disappearance, they didn't have any proof to back it up. What they did have was evidence that he was selling a large amount of methamphetamines and was endangering his own daughter. So on the early morning of March 13th, 2014, a drug enforcement task force knocked down the door of that house, their house, the one that Tiffany used to share with Ashley in Powder Springs. And according to Detective Moeller, there was dog poop and needles everywhere. They found firearms, meth, and a few bags of weed. In addition to Ashley, they also found his daughter living in that fucking house with all that shit in there and drugs.
Just horrible situation.
Oh, horrendous. So the raid ended up with the arrest of 8 people, including Ashley. His daughter, thankfully, was sent to protective custody and eventually did go on to live with Ashley's mother. We're not totally sure what that situation is like. Hopefully better than living with him. Now, of course, one of the main goals here was to arrest numerous people involved in large-scale drug operations.
but investigators also believe that it could help with Tiffany's disappearance. Everyone in the house had known and maybe even lived with her, and perhaps they could send investigators down the right trail. And then 4 months later, investigators received enough information from those involved to execute a search warrant on Ashley's mother's house. Unfortunately, because Tiffany's case is still active, we don't know what that information was. Police brought cadaver dogs, dug in the yard and crawl space. They even put Ashley's mother in handcuffs when she resisted. But unfortunately, investigators found nothing in the drug search.
Did you know that over 30% of Americans have a sluggish liver, a problem that often goes undetected until the very last minute? Dose is on a mission to educate us all on why it's so important to maintain your liver health and has created an incredible product to help you do just that. Dose for your liver was formulated to cleanse your liver of unwanted elements, aid digestion, and maintain your body's filter. And why does this matter? Well, your liver is the second largest organ in your body, and it's responsible for over 500 functions in your body. It acts as your body's filter. It flushes out unwanted elements and breaks down what you consume into essential nutrients. Because the liver does a whole lot of heavy lifting for you, it regulates cholesterol, stores vitamins and minerals, and impacts digestive and metabolic health, amongst many other things. Dose's science-backed formula promotes liver function, aids digestion, eases bloating, and even boosts energy levels. They even have clinical results to back up their product. In a double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trial, Dose for Your Liver lowered liver enzyme levels by 50% and over 86% of participants. And Dose can just make you feel better in so many different ways over time, including more energy, better digestion, reduced bloating, healthier liver enzyme function, reduction in brain fog, better sleep. And one dose for your liver shot is equivalent to 17 shots of turmeric juice. And it's this delicious orange juice, basically, is the flavor. It looks like orange juice, tastes like orange juice, and you're doing your liver a solid. You know, maybe you're a casual drinker with friends and, you know, you want to take care of your liver afterwards. Dose is great for that. Dose also has wellness shots for cholesterol, for skin, for immunity, in a variety of different flavors so that you can make your body feel better and take care of your liver, baby. Plus, Dose is also gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, and vegan. Tastes delicious. It's super convenient. You sign up for the subscription, it shows up at your door. It's in your fridge when you need it. And you're good to go. And right now you can save 30% on your first month of a subscription by going to dosedaily.co/milehigher or entering milehigher at checkout. That's dosedaily.co/milehigher for 30% off your first month's subscription.
As a busy parent and business owner, it has been such a game changer for Josh and I to do all of our weekly food shopping with Hungry Root. Our life just absolutely revolves around a meal service. We just need it. It is so necessary for us. And 2025 is always going to go down as the year. Our life really revolves around having a meal service. It is absolutely necessary for us. It really, really helps. Just one less thing that we have to think about. And 2025 is always going to go down as the year that we found Hungry Root, which has become our fave. And Hungry Root not only makes your life easier, but they can also help you to eat a lot better and reach your diet or health goals. Whether you're gluten-free, you're dairy-free, you're high protein, you're focused on your gut health, or just about anything else, just take the quick quiz. And their smart cart technology recommends recipes and ingredients that are tailored to your tastes and needs. And unlike other food delivery companies, Hungry Root has over 15,000 chef-crafted recipes to choose from each week. And many of those are made in just 15 minutes or less. And that's one of the reasons that we love Hungry Root, because if we get home at 5, we can have dinner on the table by like 5:15, 5:30. It's amazing. And with that much variety, it's easy to find options that fit everyone's taste and nutrition goals. And Hungry Root holds all its food to high standards, screening out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, and preservatives. They only source high quality meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics and offer organic produce and non-GMO options. Plus, they carry trusted brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and many more. We also love to get a salad kit or some type of wrap lunch option situation for us. at least once a week so that we can bring something into the office and we're not going to be tempted to eat out. So take advantage of this exclusive offer. For a limited time, get 40% off your first box plus a free item in every box for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/milehigher and use code milehigher. That's hungryroot.com/milehigher, code milehigher to get 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life.
And for the next year, nothing else happened. While Lisa still searched and started her own Facebook page called Find Tiffany Witten, investigators had little else to go on. Ashley had pleaded guilty to selling meth and was sentenced to a minimum of 10 years in prison, and Detective Mueller was replaced in the summer of 2015. Then a new investigator entered the scene, Mike Freer, and he had new information from a large meth trafficker who was about to go on trial, and this trafficker said that there was a rumor that Ashley and a few others had driven up to Lake Allatoona, an hour north of Atlanta, and thrown a concrete-filled barrel off the side of Bethany Bridge. The barrel's weight damaged the bridge, and Detective Freer found the spot the informant had described. The Georgia Department of Natural Resources targeted a large, heavy object 40 feet under the water using sonar technology. Lisa knew that spot because it was precisely where they would slip their boat. She said, "Do you know how many times I go over that water in the summertime? And you're telling me that she's been there the whole time. Are you kidding me?" So on September 25th, 2015, two Georgia State Patrol divers dove into the water to identify the object. Unfortunately, this large object was just a piece of concrete that was likely tossed over the side of the bridge during construction. Unfortunately, this would be the last search to try to find Tiffany Witten. And while Ashley Cottle is still the main suspect, even Detective Mueller believed that the window of time between when Tiffany ran out of the Walmart and when Ashley showed up at the IHOP on that bench was too slim for him to go and murder Tiffany and then hide her remains. And so it's really creating quite the mystery here of what happened. But on another note, while in prison, Ashley spoke to another woman about Tiffany and he said this, "You're gonna like this. I'm going to show this fucking piece of paper this bitch brought me, that detective lady. You'll like this." And he waved a flyer with a photo of Tiffany on it. The unknown woman asked, "What the fuck is that?" And Ashley responded, "That's fucking Tiffany's missing persons report. They think I killed that bitch for real." That, I think, I mean, if there's anything that's incriminating on his part, yeah, it's that statement and just the way that he talks about her. However, there was one more strange wrinkle in Tiffany's disappearance. While almost everyone believed that Tiffany died the night she went missing, a family member gave some strange information. Tiffany's half-brother, Blake, said that Tiffany called him on January 5th, 2014, and he said, "It was one of those calling apps with a weird return number. I wasn't going to answer it, but I did, and it was Tiffany apologizing for calling late. She explained that she was calling to wish him a happy birthday 5 days late." How did he know it was her? She called him by a nickname only she would have known, Mudbug. Police were made aware of this in 2016 and they investigated the call logs to make sure it was real. It's possible that Blake was simply misremembering with another interaction that they had. And it's unfortunately unknown if investigators could confirm that that call took place. Because I think that's the big question in this case is, did that call actually take place? Is there actual definitive proof of it? And that way we can verify Blake's story and when he actually recalled that conversation happening. Because that would be very telling. It would certainly tell us more about what happened the night she disappeared. But it might also provide real hope that maybe she is still out there somewhere.
In September of 2024, Ashley Cottle was released from prison. Tiffany's family was hopeful that maybe this could lead to new information potentially, but nothing has been made public and Ashley continues to walk free. The Find Tiffany Witten Facebook page is still active, though they mainly post at this point about birthdays and anniversaries, and they also share about other cases in the area, which is really cool of them. Then on the 12th anniversary of her disappearance, Lisa took to Facebook to say that Tiffany's daughter had a child of her own, and Tiffany was now a grandmother. While speaking to News Nation about the case before Ashley's release from prison, Tiffany's sister Summer says, "Everyone kind of like wrote her off because she was an addict. Addiction is a disease that you fight every day, and she had the biggest heart. She would give you the shirt off her back. She was a great person, and people tend to not see that. And so that was the hard part for me. I feel like she wasn't taking that seriously.
Which is a very valid point.
Very.
Because, like, obviously, this particular case is different than a lot of cases that we cover mm-hmm. in that, you know, this is somebody who, to many in society, and especially within a lot of local law enforcement agencies, you know, they're dealing with the epidemic of, you know, drugs and, you know, all the things that come with it. But when you have someone who is sick and dealing with addiction and started off, you know, like many do, and then this sickness gets progressively worse, you know, it's like it traps the individual. And then she's also surrounded by people and involved with people who are not only users, but people that are involved in drug trafficking. It's a very difficult situation to be in. And oftentimes you see law enforcement kind of put some of the blame on the individual and don't take that case quite as seriously, because maybe in their eyes they're viewing it as like, well, she's a criminal, so there's maybe people who deserve more of our resources, time, attention, whatever it may be, which in my mind is just wrong, because at the end of the day, she's a human being. She's somebody's mother. She's a daughter. She's a, you know, sister. And it's unfortunate that this is how these things often play out. So yeah. And just like thinking through all of this, a couple things stick out to me. For one, I was thinking about, if you look at the stills, and unfortunately we don't have, there's not a lot of information that's actually released from police, which is unfortunate. You would think that after this long of not having any updates and searches happening, that it'd just be a good idea to release everything that they have, and maybe something could come from that. But my mind was like, how do we know for sure that she was contacted by a loss prevention associate? Could have been somebody else pretending to be that. And I started kind of doing a little research, and it does sound like, and based on what I saw in the stills, loss prevention associates at Walmart wear plain clothes. They often mm-hmm. wear a white shirt, polo with khakis or something like that.
A little more discreet.
Yeah. And like when you disguise. Look at the stills, you can see the individual who comes up to her looks like he's wearing khakis and mm-hmm. a white shirt. Again, it's very, very, it's early, early morning. And there's a lot of people that dispute whether or not there'd even be loss prevention associates working that time of night. But obviously it's depending on per store, and maybe the store is notorious for shoplifters, and maybe they did have loss prevention associates. Cause I was like, well, maybe she ran into somebody who's potentially knows of the drug situation going on. The fact that Ashley has drugs in his truck or something like that was maybe going to attempt to follow them back to the car or something like that. But the more I think about it, the more I look at them, like, I think this was actually a loss prevention associate, and she just freaked and she let go of everything and then ran out. But the one thing that does stick out to me is the fact that we have no idea what the parking lot footage looks like. This is Walmart. This is like one of the most lit up places you can go to at this time of night. They have cameras everywhere. As far as I know, I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they have cameras in their parking lots and on the exterior of their buildings. So I'd be curious to see or know what's actually taking place in that footage. Can they see where she ran? Did she run back to Ashley's truck? Did she get back into the truck? Where did she go once she exited? It seems crazy to me that she ran out of Walmart, and we have no idea what direction or where she went from there. Like, yeah. I could understand maybe knowing that she got into his truck, which would be a great lead to have, but it seems like...
Doesn't seem like that was the case.
It seems like law enforcement might be sitting on that footage and may just not have released any details from it, because maybe she got into a different vehicle. But it seems like if law enforcement is actually trying to solve the case, they'd release those details.
Yeah, and especially with Detective Mueller on it at this point, I think, you know, they'd be more helpful for that if they actually had something.
Well, I think that's one of the big disappointments for Lisa, is that she feels like they haven't really done a whole lot to help find Tiffany.
Well, they don't prioritize addicts. They just don't.
No.
They completely write them off. We see this with tons of cases. I've covered several. I think safe to say every single case that I've covered over the years where someone is suffering from addiction, the police just do not take it seriously. There's always a mistake there. I've never seen excellent police work on a case of an addict. It's just the horrible reality of it. It's just devastating to see families go through things like this. And, you know, I've very briefly talked about, I've had my own experience with addicts in my family. And at one point, one of them was missing. And we didn't know, you know, we've tried to file a missing persons report. They wouldn't even file one. So they just,
they don't want to spend the time. No. They don't want to spend the time or resources.
And they don't treat them like human beings at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's a lot of just blame of they got themselves into this situation. And it's so offensive to these families. And I think the way that she, Lisa, put it, that her daughter wasn't born an addict, is such a great way to say it. You know, she wasn't always like this, and it doesn't make a difference at all about the type of person that she is or whether or not she deserves help.
Drip, 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 drop. Start dripping your drops with a doctor-developed proven fast hydration that helps your mind and body work better. It uses a precise ratio of electrolytes and glucose for rapid absorption, delivering 3 times electrolytes and half the sugar of leading sports drinks. Yuck. Sugar. Bad for you. So you feel results fast, more focus, better energy, improved mood, even glowing skin. Ah. Drip Drop science-backed formulas trusted by those out there doing the real work, like firefighters, medical professionals, and everybody else out there working a 9-to-5, baby. And over 90% of top college and pro teams, because it's engineered to rehydrate you faster and more effectively than water alone. You know, I love water, but I love a drip drop because a drip drop's providing all the drip. The great thing about drip drop compared to all those other non-drippy drinks is that drip drop actually tastes good. All those other ones are, ugh, you know, you're kind of choking it down. You're kind of, you know, gargling at the end. Not with Drip Drop. There are over 16 original flavors and 8 zero sugar options, and it fits seamlessly into my routine. I don't even think about it. It's just the packets are there. They're in the office closet. They're in my nightstand. They're next to my child's bed. They're ready to go to provide that hydration, you know, or after a workout, get myself rehydrated. I'm a habitual dehydrated individual. I don't drink enough water, and it shows. It really shows. But Drip Drop is bringing the drip back to my life. I love it. To make it easy, Drip Drop has a flexible subscription option, so you're never stuck without that proven fast hydration, whether you're on the job, you're at the gym, or you're just parenting. You're just trying to get through the day and get those little kiddos to bed. You'll always have your drip on hand. And right now, Drip Drop is offering podcast listeners 20% off your first order. Just go to dripdrop.com and use promo code MileHigher. That's dripdrop.com. Use promo code MileHigher for 20% off. Stock up now before the cold hits hard or the heat, depending on where you live. Drip Drop and use promo code MileHigher now. Right. Or if a crime is perpetrated against you, if she was murdered, why does her murder not deserve to be solved? Right. Why is that not worthy of the same type of level of investigation that any other person would receive?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the really sad thing about this is that it's just, that's the way it's played out, is that they're not prioritizing it.
And that's
got
to just be the most devastating thing as a, you know, family member, as a mother, to think I'm never going to get the help that my daughter truly needs because of that. She's judged and written off, and it's just horrible. It's so sad.
Yeah, and I mean, there's just so many questions that still remain here, because it's like, well, if Ashley was there as well, and then he's shortly thereafter over at the IHOP, which isn't all that far away, then where is she? Is she, you know, does he know where she went? It's from what he's saying, he doesn't know. She just disappeared. She just vanished. And so he may or may not be involved in her disappearance. I don't know that he'd have the time to be able to do something to her in the time that he's then seen after she vanishes from the Walmart.
And if he did, would he have the
ability to like cover it up?
Right, and, right.
I mean,
but I'm not ruling it out. It's definitely possible.
I feel like I feel like there's more. There's obviously more to this story. There's more going on here. This is drug trafficking. There's lots of people involved in this. It's 2 a.m. or, you know, around there when this is all happening. That's when, you know, these, you know, bad things happen, dangerous things happen at this time of night. He's carrying seemingly a large amount of drugs in his vehicle. There's robberies. I mean, if you look up Marietta, Georgia crime statistics, I mean, there's a lot of crime happening. There's a lot of drug trafficking, shootings, things like, there's lots of stuff going on around this time. So it could be, if I had to guess it, if something happened to her, or she was murdered, I would think that it might have something to do with the fact that Ashley is also carrying all these drugs with him around there. Maybe why he had the reaction that he did when she got caught shoplifting, and why maybe that would also create a motive for him to get upset with her and do something to her later and kind of play it off of like, oh, I don't know. And he showed up at the IHOP to make it seem like he was kind of there the whole time. Maybe. And that's the thing. There's windows of time that we don't know what happened because police haven't given us their version of events or like what the timeline is of things. And it's just, there's so many holes in this case. It's crazy. Well,
like Detective Mueller also said, you know, they missed out on the first 48 hours because the original detective assigned to the case just didn't care, doesn't care, like, and openly said that. It's just so fucked up.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I mean,
really feel for Lisa and for her daughter as well. It's horrible.
I was just gonna, about the parking lot footage, I think it's important to mention that the only reason they had the interior footage was because Walmart was saving it in case Tiffany like disputed the lawsuit against her for shoplifting.
Yeah.
So from my understanding, one of the reasons why there isn't any parking lot footage is just because typically the footage would get deleted. You know, they didn't know that she was missing until Detective Mueller contacted them all those months later.
Yeah.
So the fact that there's like this kind of bureaucratic level to it as well of just like, yeah, we were just keeping this on hand in case she disputed this in court.
Yeah, that's all we care about.
Right.
For the $15 shirt.
Right.
Right. And if detectives jumped on this immediately, they probably could have gotten exterior footage.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is really unfortunate. I mean, there's just so many cases like this though where this is the lack of response, I should say.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why if you've ever, there's literally a show called 48 hours, you know, there's literally, you know, the first 48, like I watched the whole Netflix on like detectives that follows detectives through, you know, the first 48 hours after somebody goes missing or a murder happens. And when they are on it, it's still hard to figure out. They're still trying to piece it together. And when you don't do any of that whatsoever, start interviewing people and start trying to create that timeline for things, it's just, it becomes very, very difficult to walk it back once that time's passed. It's just, yeah, it's really, I mean, I hold out hope that with the conversation with Blake, I come back to, because I think that's very interesting. And I hope that that is legitimate and was in fact her later on. And maybe perhaps she's still out there and just, you know, hasn't reconnected with her family yet. But I do also see the other possibility here, which isn't good. But obviously important to continue to cover cases like this because you just never know. I mean, people show up years later and get reunited with their families. And, you know, sometimes they watch what type of media coverage is put out there and you just never know. You never know at the end of the day, and this is somebody's family member that they miss every single day. So yeah, we'll definitely be linking the Facebook page. So if you want to go, you know, just provide some support for Tiffany's family, we'll have that for you. But just for those out there, keep an eye out.
I also want to end with a quote from her mom. She said, "My intelligent mind tells me she is not still alive. My heart wants to believe that she is. It's a huge conflict for me. And I just need to know because I feel I've lived the last 11 years in limbo. In the long run, all that matters to me is knowing that either she's here on earth and she's happy and healthy or she's in heaven. I just need to know one of those two things. And not knowing that would be torture."
Mm-hmm.
"Of what you know and trying to understand what you still don't. Well, I don't let my mind go to the place that, you know, a lot of people have said, well, maybe she was sex trafficked or maybe this, maybe that. I just will not let my mind go there. I do know that if she is still on this earth, that she's not in a place where she can reach out to the people who love her, because she would. She would never be gone for this long. She would never leave her family. I mean, when you talk about the milestones that she's missed, I mean, not only that, the death of her grandmother, who she just adored, she missed. And she's missed her sister's wedding, her daughter's graduation, the birth of her first niece, you know, just so many things. And I know that she would not, she just wouldn't stay away. So, like I said, my intelligent mind says that she's no longer on this earth. And I would prefer to believe that than to believe that she's being held somewhere against her will. I would rather believe that she's not on this earth than to think that.
Lisa, my heart goes out to you and your family. Thank you for giving us a little bit of your time. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing part of who Tiffany is to you and what you miss most about her with us and our audience. Praying for you, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
Thanks, Maureen. We really appreciate you covering her case, too. Thanks so much.
Tiffany was 5'3". She was blonde and weighed 105 pounds when she disappeared. She has multiple tattoos, including Chinese symbols on the inside of her left wrist and a butterfly on her hip. Anyone with information on her disappearance should contact the Marietta Police Department at 770-794-2366.
We're going to leave today's episode, I think. Definitely interested to hear all of your thoughts out there, and if you have any ideas of what you think might have happened. I think it's pretty clear to some extent of, you know, something happened after she ran out of that Walmart. And I hope that maybe they're still working on it. Maybe they're still working new leads. But yeah, let's just keep this case out there in people's minds. Cause you just never know. You never know. Someone out there may know something, and, you have all that information, but we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there today. We thank you guys
for joining us.
Yeah. Important one, but, we'll be back next week with another episode, of course. Till then, keep on taking your mind a mile higher.
All right, Joe, thanks so much for meeting us here today.
No, thank you for coming here today.
Oh, of course, of course. So, a couple questions.
Yeah.
First, we wanted to know, what is the overall mission of the Gabby Petito Foundation, and what resources do you offer?
So, that's a complex question. We offer a lot. We do education, prevention, kind of the Jim does first responder training for EMTs and fire departments, because a lot of times when 911's called, police don't go to the scene, especially if it's just a medical event or something like that.
Right.
So they're the front lines when it comes to stuff like that. So giving them tips and tricks to help identify domestic violence situations. Mm-hmm. Tara and Nikki do the education and prevention, going around the country, talking to colleges, schools, conferences, and stuff like that about domestic violence, things to pay attention to, some of the red flags that there are. And then I do the legislative work. And then if you go to the Gabby Petito Foundation, there's a thing on the website called the Alliance, because what works, let's just say, in New York might not work in Wyoming, you know, because different type of, you know, towns and whatnot.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of different programs on there that you can use that fits your area. You know what I mean? And then also same thing with missing people. So I'll try and give them tips and information and how to get their stories to the media, and how to keep them relevant in the media until that person's brought home safe.
Yeah, that is extreme.
So it's a lot.
It's wide scope, but all such necessary things. And how did you get in contact with Safe Project?
Safe Project reached out to Nikki and Tara about doing an event that they had here. And then Tara and Nikki came. They absolutely fell in love with the people that worked here, because when you met them, they're really amazing.
Yeah.
It's such a close knit, and that's what really drew us to them. Mm-hmm. And Nikki and Tara noticed that they didn't have a security fence, you know, around their property, and brought it up to them, like, yeah, this is something that we would love to have, you know, but it's not inexpensive. And we just decided that we're going to put up half and try and raise the other half. And that's when we heard from you. which is kind of why we're here today. And I'll tell you, I'm in awe of the Higher Hope Foundation and the stuff that you guys do. That's just amazing what you guys do. And I'd love to be highlighting that stuff, to be honest.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Well, you guys are really our inspiration too. You know, early on when we saw what you guys were doing, we were just blown away that in your time of need and grief that you started something to help other families and have really made it your mission. And it's just extremely inspiring to us.
I appreciate that. But we're fortunate because there's four of us.
Yeah.
You know, so leaning on each other, and then we have our own niche that we kind of stick with. You know what I mean? And it just naturally happened. It's not like we said, oh, you do this, you do that.
Right, yeah.
It's kind of what we gravitated to. And I mean, the amount of work that Nikki and Tara do is just wild.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing events all over. I mean, listen, go to the Gabby Petito Foundation and kind of help in any way you can, whether it be a program that you happen to have. If you want to do a few dollars, by all means, you know what I mean? But it's because of that that enables us to do what we're doing here today and getting them that security fence to make sure that people that come here are safe.
Yeah.
That's step one.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So when they came here and they realized they didn't have a fence, how did they first come to you and let you know that they felt like, let's get involved, let's get their fence, a security fence?
Nikki and Tara, they got me and Jim on the line. They're like, hey, listen, we noticed this. This is something we would love to do, get them a fence and give them the proper security that they need. And me and Jim were like, sure, let's do it. And, you know, we kind of figured out how we were going to do it. We were going to put up half. Mm-hmm. And we were going to raise the other half. And whether that be matching donations, excuse me, or whatever it was. But again, then you and I were at CrimeCon.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of struggled with you, Josh, and you. And just you're like, I think it was like 3-4 days later. You're like, you got us, we got an email. We got some cool information that we're going to share with you. And you guys are going to put up the other half. Like, that's fantastic, you know? And to be put in a position you're able to do that is great. Don't get me wrong, but when you meet the people that you're trying to help, when you see the work that they do and how important it is, mm-hmm. it really is just humbling and just grateful that you're able to do something that can be impactful. To be honest,
yeah,
I think that's why it was such a big deal for us to come up here to Laramie to see it firsthand and just really get the lay of the land. And you realize like the fence is critical from prior experiences working with a crisis center that had a fence. I know how important that is to be able to have some barrier between the public and the actual safe house itself. So yeah, no, we were super, I mean, as soon as Kendall mentioned it, I was like, yeah, let's do it. I mean, if we've got the funds, let's do it. And I'm glad it all worked out because
100%.
Yeah.
It's something too that's going to has a long lasting impact, right? Like this is not just a one and done type thing where this will just provide that safety and security for years to come. So it's awesome.
That's it. The amount of people that come through, you know, and that's why you guys got into the foundation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's why you started the Higher Hope. It's why we started the Gabby Petito Foundation, you know, is to make the difference. We do it to, I'm not going to say we. I do it because it helps make sense of a situation, right? Is it make sense yet? No. You know what I mean? Will it? Maybe. But I won't know until I find out, you know, and I'm not going to just sit back and be like, well, you know, whatever. I'm sure this is, you know, not much of a different reason why you're in it, though, to be honest with you. So together is how we're going to make that difference. That's why we use that hashtag, together we can, you know, because that's it. It really is. It's arm in arm, step by step, you know, together. You can see nothing can not be done that way. So,
yeah.
No, the more you do it, too, the more you realize, you know, little actions equal big results, right?
Right.
So a lot of little works is what makes something really great happen. And
yeah.
And that's why we got into it was because, you know, we were kind of seeing it little by bit over the years, but to be able to kind of concentrate the efforts and then collaborate with other foundations and other nonprofits, I mean, that's really what it's all about. And so, yeah, no, we're super, you know, blessed and excited to be doing this with you guys and helping out such a great nonprofit here.
Yeah, they're just wonderful. I'm so glad you guys introduced us to them. I mean, they're right, they're our neighbors. So.
It really, and it's a beautiful place. Like,
yes.
It really is. And yes. Just being able to help make that impact and I'll just be able to do this for them, it's going to have that impact for years. years.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so great for our audience to be able to actually see the impact directly, because all of this is thanks to them, at least from our side of things.
Same with us. We get our donations through, right, you know, social media and stuff like that, doing things with you guys, you know what I mean? Without a doubt. What I would love to see, which would be really cool, and I'll tell it to your camera here, which is because I want to have them hear it from me, if that's all right.
Yeah.
If you're ever in a position to tell your story where you feel safe and comfortable enough to share it, you don't have to put names or dates or places, but just let people know that there's a light at the end of that tunnel, because it is a dark time for them. And when the Netflix thing came out, we were talking about it before, a lot of people started to share their stories and let them, I guess, help inspire others to contact their advocates, find that safe plan to get out of their current situation. So if you're in a place where you feel comfortable enough to share it publicly, I'd love for that to continue, because it's stories like that that help inspire others that might be going through it to get out of that situation. And you never know that your story might be the catalyst to get that person out. You might never meet them, but it was because of your bravery that they were able to do so. I'd love to see that continue.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really the most powerful stories that people can hear.
Yeah.
And what would you recommend for people who have realized they're in a bad situation? They don't know where to turn. They don't know what to do next. They feel like they are stuck. What resources would you recommend looking into or actions to take?
And that's the best question to ask, to be honest with you, because most people don't know where to go. If yourself or you have a friend, we always give the National Domestic Violence Hotline, 1-800-799-SAFE, because we go to so many areas, that's the best place to begin. You can also text 88788, text START to 88788 and talk to somebody. GabbyPetitoFoundation.org, just to help find what situation, what your situation would call for. Find if you need to get in touch with an advocate that understands your particular situation, because a plan that works for one might not work for the other.
Right.
Right. So speaking to someone who has the training, who has the knowledge with your particular situation, form a plan for yourself and get out that way instead of, because that's the most dangerous time. So having everything set and that plan in place is probably the most important thing. And going to National Domestic Violence Hotline, they'll let you know what resources you have in your area. GabbyPetitoFoundation.org, again, same thing. You'll let you know what resources and programs you have in your area as well. So, and it's not just, and GabbyPetitoFoundation.org is not just the United States. If someone outside of the country is watching this, there are other countries as well that we have that also have their programs out there, because as social media, you're aware, it's not just the United States that watch you.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Right, right. Yeah, that's absolutely crucial. It's so awesome you guys can offer that too. How many countries have you guys worked with, would you say?
Quite a bit. We've talked to and worked with people in the United Kingdom, Ireland, the Philippines, New Zealand, Australia.
Great, wow.
All of South America. I mean, just everywhere.
Wow.
It really is. Gabby's story went everywhere.
It did.
And I can't tell you why. I really can't tell you why.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think if more people are paying attention to the science, people are not as shy when it comes to the topic of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. When you think of domestic violence, we were talking about this earlier as well. When you think of domestic violence, most people think of a woman. And that's a fair point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one out of three women, right? Like, we know the deal. It's horrible. But people don't think of the men that are victims of domestic violence.
Right.
That there's not many shelters for men at all, to be honest with you. Matter of fact, when a man wants to come forward, a lot of people laugh at them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's not okay. But everyone forgets about the children.
Yeah.
10 to 20 million children a year. You being a parent, me being a parent, you know what I mean? I was a product of it. My father tried to murder me when I was 4, you know, for touching his car. You know, beat my mom several times, didn't, you know, in the hospital. Like, so I've seen him get arrested. I've had the cops at my house. I know what that family like is, that family life is like. So, but people forget about the children and the trauma that inflicts on them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that cycle repeats. And doing the education and prevention that Tara does and Nikki does, that we all do, but mainly them, Hopefully, you know, all together, stuff that we're doing, we'll take that from 1 in 3 women to 1 in 4.
Yeah.
Maybe we can move that needle to 1 in 5 by the time I have to leave this place, you know, and we'll see. So that's the goal. The goal is to be put out of business, actually. That's our ultimate goal.
Yeah.
When we're no longer needed.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's just it, you know?
It's painful.
It's a devastating topic to talk about.
It is.
And, but it's not a topic that should be hidden.
No.
It's not a topic that's a secret. Listen, there are statistics. When you look at the data for domestic violence, it's horrible. And then when you start bringing in gender, and I'm not gender, race into the equation, the numbers get worse.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When you bring in orientation into the numbers, they get worse. So having a program that not only is inclusive of all types of relationships is very important, you know, and having an understanding of how to talk to people in those relationships, you know, is very important. And we've only been doing this a short amount of time, but 4 years now. But we've had that crash course for, you know, and we're not going to stop trying to help as many people as we can. As I know you're not, that's why you're here. That's why you do it.
Yeah.
You know, you tell these people stories. Everybody's stories is important.
They are.
Every missing person, every domestic violence story, their story deserves to be told, and it deserves to, you know, let people learn from it. Use it as a learning tool to get better. We want everyone to use Gabby's video. Use her Moab stop video. It's being used around the country in peace training, you know, academies across the nation, as well as other nations, from what I understand.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's a great learning tool. It's not a great thing that happened, but it's a great learning tool. Yeah. And to utilize that and get better from that.
Yeah. Priceless.
Yeah. It really is. It'd be a waste not to use it. Mm-hmm. Especially when you can see what's going to come of it or what the possibilities could be.
Right.
So it's important.
It's just amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
It was so great getting to spend time with you and working on this. And hopefully one day you can come out to Colorado and we can sit down and have a longer
talk. I'm down with that. We'll definitely sit down because, you know what, conversations like this have to be had.
Yeah.
And hopefully your viewers will see the impact that not only you're making, the Gabby Petito Foundation's making, this is something we were saying at the table before. Again, I keep on saying that because we had a long conversation.
Tough.
If your focus wants to be substance abuse, help domestic violence. Uh-huh. If homelessness is your passion project, help domestic violence.
Yeah, right.
Alcohol abuse, you know, suicide. If these topics are important to you, help domestic violence, because a lot of them kind of funnel towards domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make a significant impact on all of those things if we help this one particular topic. And I think that's a great way to combat it right now. I think that's something that we have to get a bigger understanding on, that all this is the key. Yeah, it really is. And having that understanding and the impact that the education, because we do a poor job education-wise in this country for domestic violence, we'll definitely take that number from 1 in 3 to 1 in 4, and then 1 in 5, and then you won't need the shelters anymore.
Yeah. That's the dream, right?
That is the dream. Good luck, God.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been awesome.